This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
From the day forward, American presidents will be able to invoke Senate Joint Resolution 46 as justification for launching preemptive military strikes against any sovereign nations that they perceive to be a threat. You'd better pay attention. You're not always going to have a president of your party in the White House. How will you feel about it then?
West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd speaking Thursday from the Senate floor, criticizing the Bush administration's proposed resolution to authorize military intervention in Iraq. Dan Shore is away this week, so we are joined by Michael Kinsley, founding editor of Slate Magazine, in our studios. Michael, thanks very much for being back with us.
Thank you, Scott.
The House of Representatives reached what I'll characterize as an oral agreement with the White House to endorse a resolution to give President Bush the authority to begin a military strike against Iraq if he so chooses. The Senate remains divided on this issue. What have you learned from the deliberation so far?
Well, that was a great stemwinder from Senator Byrd, who is one of the great stemwinding speakers. It's slightly misleading, however. Mm-hmm. Bush did agree to limits on this resolution, specifically addressing Iraq rather than the Middle East in general, or as Byrd would have it, life in general.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
we don't like Iceland, so we're going to take them out.
Right. Yeah. He can't do it on the basis of this resolution. Mm-hmm. However, Bush, like all current recent presidents, has claimed the right to do that without a resolution. Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, it doesn't matter from that perspective either.
Mm-hmm. The White House has been advocating what's preemption is a military doctrine. And in fact, Senator Byrd, among others, has referred to it as the Bush Doctrine. Are the principles of this doctrine necessarily new?
Well, the Bush administration also calls it the Bush Doctrine, but they also sometimes say it's nothing new. They sort of try to have it both ways. Mm-hmm. There used to be a thing called the domino theory during the arguments over Vietnam. The argument was that if we don't take a stand in Vietnam, next it'll be Laos, Cambodia, and the communists will ultimately be in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially the preemption doctrine, the same thing. So it's true that it's nothing new.
Mm-hmm. It goes back even earlier, though?
Nations have always reserved and probably correctly reserved the right, if they know they're about to be attacked, to go first. The question is, what does it mean about to be attacked? Does it have to be imminent in the next week? Mm-hmm. Is it some little country far away that could, in some century, be a threat?
Mm-hmm. How is the debate that we have heard this week in the Senate, and for that matter, the House of Representatives, different from the one that obtained, I guess, 11 years ago, when the first President Bush was looking to launch a military strike against Iraq?
Well, the main difference is that this is the second round, and that first version, in fact, happened. Politicians, like generals, are always fighting the last war. And in round one, the last war was Vietnam, and people were afraid of quagmires, and many people voted against the resolution. It was much more controversial. Mm-hmm. This time, the last war was Gulf War I, which is considered to have gone very well, and the people who voted against it, some of them consider that to have been a mistake, mm-hmm. and politically very risky, so that this time there's much less controversy, and the vote won't even be close.
Let's take a look at impending action in the U.N., because Hans Blix, the chief U.N. arms inspector, met with Secretary of State Colin Powell Friday. Now, the U.S. is encouraging Mr. Blix to hold off on inspections until after the U.N. wins new unfettered access to Iraqi sites. That would mean the tough resolution that the U.S. and Britain have been pushing. Is that going to happen, do you think?
They're going to have much more difficulty getting a resolution out of the U.N. than they are getting it out of Congress. If their strategy is to get something Saddam can agree to that we can live with and avoid a war, that would not happen. But if their strategy is, as it pretty obviously is, to get something that Saddam Hussein cannot agree to, mm-hmm. as a basis for war, that is somewhat more promising.
You noticed any inroads in the U.S.-British case with Russia, China, France?
Well, there's an interesting article in the New Republic this week about wheeling and dealing for votes in the Security Council as if it was a pork barrel piece of legislation on the Hill. The deal with Russia is the most interesting. The Russians have a rebellion on their hands in Chechnya, and our position has been all along, under both parties' administrations, that the Chechnyans were freedom fighters who had a good cause. And the Russians are saying, no, they're terrorists. This is part of the war on terrorism. And we are apparently coming over to the Russian point of view in order to get their support for the aspect of the war on terrorism that we are enthusiastic about.
Attorney General Ashcroft called yesterday a defining day in America's fight against terrorism. John Walker Lind was sentenced in Virginia for 20 years for fighting with the Taliban in Afghanistan against the U.S., served at least 17. The British al-Qaeda member, Richard Reid, the man who tried to give a hot foot to a Paris to Miami flight, and alas would have killed a lot of people, pled guilty in Boston to charges of terrorism. Also on Friday, four people in Oregon and Michigan were arrested on charges of terrorism. Is the bucket half full or half empty? Do these events help Americans feel safer, or at the same time, do they alarm more Americans at the extent of the threat?
Well, I think they make Attorney General Ashcroft feel a bit safer. He's been out on a limb a bit, having arrested a lot of people and kept them in prison for over a year, some of them, without much basis that he's made public. Whether you feel safer because this misguided kid who got mixed up with the Taliban is going to be in jail for 20 years.
This is John Walker Lind.
John Walker Lind,
yeah.
is as a matter of opinion. I think certainly getting these conspirators in Oregon, if they are in fact guilty, is a substantial accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice Mr. Reid made no pretense about being apologetic? He confirmed his al-Qaeda membership and said he was proud of it.
Well, the people who hijacked the planes on September 11th gave up their lives for it. So these are zealots, and that's why they're dangerous.
Arrests in a very different category. Enron's former chief financial officer, Andrew Fastow, was arrested this week on fraud and conspiracy charges. The Enron scandal is now being taught at business schools. Are we beginning to gain some understanding of the full import of what's happened?
Well, I think Joe Nocera made the key point. This is starting to look, in the Enron case, a lot less like some complicated result of cultural excesses and more like simple crookedness. And that, in a way, makes it less interesting and less valuable as a lesson, because there are always going to be crooks. The interesting stories, to me at least, are the ones like Jack Welch, the chairman of GE, mm-hmm. who did nothing illegal but got carried away with something that looks bad in retrospect. And the things that are legal, the things that people are allowed to do without going to jail, tell us more about the state of the culture.
And quickly, a man who's a founding internet journalist. Last week's stories about how blondes were going to become extinct within a century turn out to be absolutely fabricated. What does this tell us about the way misinformation can travel?
Well, the story is obviously untrue. If you just look around this studio, since we're on radio, I should tell people we're all natural blondes here.
Our producer and director.
Yeah,
and
everywhere we look. Everyone is quick to blame the internet these days when stories like this happen. It is, in fact, the British journalism is more responsible for it in its robust tradition of storytelling, to put it nicely.
Thanks, Michael Kinsley.